kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have another reviews episode lined up for you. We got Pernell and Chris joining us. Pernell's here first. Pernell, how are you doing?
I'm fighting sugar. It's hard, man.
Fighting sugar?
Yes, I want to lose weight, and yet sugar tastes so good. It can't.
It does taste
Easter
good.
Easter bunnies. You know, it's like those marshmallow chicks and bunnies you can get during Easter?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I may have said, like, I'm going to drop ounces, but I had two bags of those. Two bags. So, like, one of them has just been sitting in the cabinet for, like, the past week. And then for some reason, after going to the gym today, I was like, you know, I want to eat some marshmallow chicks and bunnies. I just went there and pulled the bag out. I just do one serving, three chicks, maybe a bunny. And I ate those. And I was like, no, I can't stop there. It's a sugar town. Just kept going.
Stop now. It's sugar town.
Like it's addictive, man. It's in my body. It tastes so good. I am hopped up, and I am pretty sure like five of these is like 300 calories. I'm sorry. Eight of them is. But nonetheless, it's still ridiculous. But otherwise, I'm doing okay. Just trying to get things down as far as, like I said, the weight stuff goes. Playing a lot of games. Trying to be oddly social. You know how hard that shit is?
Being social? Yeah.
Yes, like going to like, hey, how do I meet new people? And people are always like, you can join a club. I'm like, what club? Oh, go on the internet, look for clubs, and there's always like, it's like there's never any cool clubs or clubs that I'm affiliated. I can actually integrate myself with. Like, do you like basketball? No. Well, you can't join this club. Do you like macrame? No, not really. We can't join this club. Do you like board games? Yes, I do. Well, come join this club. And then you show up and everybody's 60. Like, this isn't cutting the mustard, man.
It's like that's a bridge club, isn't it?
It may as well be a damn bridge club. Everybody's old enough for bridge. But it's like the next thing I found, like I just stumbled across, like is wastewater treatment club. Which,
what?
The fact that that exists even is just confounding to me. And yet I'm like, you know, I could do that. I think I could do that.
I know what kind of club you need to look for.
Which, what club?
A Tech Dex club.
I would never, never, never in my life, unless I was to burn it to the ground.
Oh, God. Never. See, our friend Robbie from Idea Factory, he listened to the last episode you were on where you were shit-talking Tech Dex. And... and he said, what's with the tech deck disses? I like tech dicks.
Well, then, that's a whole nother dialogue right there. So it didn't say that.
He said, I like tech decks because they're so silly.
Oh, my God. Welcome to SML Podcast After Dark. He is your host, Joe, and I am.
Oh, my Lord. I told him that I would let you know that that he disagreed with your feelings on tech decks, and then he wants to know if you can pull off a clean kick flip 50-50 kiss rail and land it with a tech deck.
The first question is, what the hell is a kiss 50 numeric indie hop drizzle? Whatever you just said, because I have no idea. It's like I used to play Tony Hawk Pro Skater, and I'm going for high scores. And I'm just mashing those buttons. It's like double, triple, Lindy, hop, flip, scoop, spin, dizzle. And I'm like, what's the score? I don't know any of the things I just did. Just give me the number, because that's what matters. But see, now he's going to see. Robbie's going to have to record himself doing it now. I think he just put it on the line. We need to see what he's talking about. He needs to lay it on the line. Show us the awesome that is tech deck magic.
Yes, tech deck. Deck is the word.
Do not show us tech dick magic. We don't want to see that. We want to see tech deck magic.
I can't believe of all the things I stumbled on, it was tech deck.
honestly, you got to admit, it was the most comedic place to stumble. So it's totally worth it. And I'm sure everyone's cool, is happy about it, actually.
Oh, my Lord. I hope he's listening. I really do. I hope he's listening.
Honestly, I'm surprised he didn't reference anything about the review proper, because I didn't even hold back on that thing. Like, I've got friends who like Mo Chronicles a lot, and but at the same time, they won't use the typical dialogue I would. They would use the, it's Japanese culture, or, you know, it's not that big a deal, you know, it's just, kids just shouldn't play it. I'm like, hey, if you think the game's cool, it's okay. I thought the game was fun too, but let's not mince words about what they got you doing. We know what's up, but like, I'm still playing the game. I do like it. It's just, I can't help but laugh about that damn concept behind the Dick Forest. Oh, geez. And also, I mentioned like how the level, all the other levels get like that too. Is the sticky liquid, like the sticky liquid lake or something, which is basically jizz lake.
Nice.
And honestly, I saw that place and lost my shit.
Sticky liquid lake. That is amazing.
Yes. It's just, they're not even trying to hide it. They don't even try to hide it. It's hysterical.
It's like, art.
It's art. It's some kind of art. it's like, I don't know how to put it. It's like obviously you can go to the nebula, the sex nebula, we'll call it. And when you are in the sex nebula, you can go off in a variety of different directions. And depending on the direction you go determines how you'll receive what you see, like how you'll take it. So there's the skeevy, god-awful, I'm defriending you zone, which is games like that Rape Lay and that one where you're like a jackass in the zombie apocalypse. That's the defriending zone. If someone's in there, I don't want to talk to them because there's something going on up there. Then there's just a straight up, I like titties zone. All right.
Which is good. That's a good zone.
Which is good. Yeah, it's a good zone. I mean, I like titties too. You know, you end up over there, that's all fine and dandy. And I'm sure admittedly, there probably needs to be more games like this for women. It's like, I like buff chest and maybe a little dick. You know, there should be a zone in gaming for those guys too. You know, just to have access to. I think lately, the closer we got, like things like Dream Daddy or whatever. And then you got Mo Chronicles, which is just we're just ridiculously goofy about every damn thing we're going to do. Like, they're not even trying to take themselves even remotely seriously. It's just, here's a force composed of penises. And we are fighting cats with drawers on their heads. That's totally cool. Dominatrix riding a whale. That's great. Everyone likes that.
My Lord.
Like, you can't take it seriously. You can't try to. It's just you stare and you laugh at the next, every individual off-the-wall weird thing they throw in there. You're just waiting for it to laugh at it. That's the Mo Zone. That's the Mo Chronicle
Zone. The Mo Zone.
Welcome to the Mo Zone. There's your episode title, by the Mo Zone. But, but the game itself is good. I know. I hope he's listening to that, because we're basically like talking about this game twice in two episodes. Like, you can't buy that.
Yeah. So your overall verdict on Mo Chronicles?
Again, it's a buy it. If you're okay with that anime titty,
I really got to pick that game up. Hopefully, hopefully this week we'll have the spare bucks to drop 20 on that one.
Oh, I can understand.
So ridiculous.
Though, oh my God, I'm sitting here like, on one hand, I'm like, yeah, totally get it. But then the other hand, I'm like, but what dungeon crawls are you lacking? Because I want to push, that other one on you, the Labyrinth of Refrain, because that's my baby. That's like the best dungeon crawl on the Switch right now. But honestly, you can't go wrong with either one. So I'm not going to knock you by either.
Well, should we talk about games that you're actually here to talk about this week?
I guess so. I suppose we could do that.
We might as well, right?
I just want to keep talking about Dick Force. What? Duty calls.
Duty calls.
The Duty Force.
Oh, man. Let's get into this. The first game that you're here to talk about this week is called Our World is Ended, developed by Red Entertainment, published by PQ, but released April 18th on the Switch and PS4 for $59.99. and new masterpiece of narrative visual novel storytelling. Follow Judgment 7, a team of eccentric developers working on their latest game in augmented reality. On a summer's day, their AR headset lets them catch a glimpse of Tokyo in ruins. Could it really be the end of the world? Purnell, tell us about it.
Well, I'm kind of glad you picked this game as the first to discuss after we talked about the sex zone, because it is very fitting to be that game. So when I looked into this title, I was expecting a rather, I don't want to say serious narrative, because I mean, yeah, it's very colorful and stuff, but I was expecting more like a heavy sci-fi leaning, you know, adventure style visual novel game. And while this does have a pretty cool sci-fi plot to it, it is not serious at all. Like, it barely even tries to be serious. So I can't say a ton about it, because being that it is a visual novel, anything you say is kind of a spoiler. But what I will say is that I can give you the general gist of the game beyond what the description says, which is that the augmented reality that the main characters use was developed by the head of Judgment 7. And during a group test that the entire development team takes with the headset, it glitches out and it dumps everybody into like a VR version of Asakusa, Tokyo. So throughout the game, all of your characters are trying to come to terms with what the hell is going on, why they're bumping into stuff. I don't want to spoil it because, again, that's like the first couple of hours of the game. If I tell you, it's like, well, I already know I'm going to be here going into this. So, but whatever they lead into, they're trying to cope with how they do. There's also some nefarious folks involved in this in regards to like how things are playing out, and they have to respond to that as well. And you will be along for the ride as you mash that in this game, weirdly enough, the B button to forward dialogue or rather listen to dialogue and then move ahead and just let the story play out. Now, unlike, I think visual novels in general are kind of like this, but there's not much in the form of player interaction that you can do. Every once in a blue moon, there is a opportunity for you to answer like a choice. So let's just say, for example, you're in a zone and you're like, hey, we're going to go look for supplies. All right, who do you want to go with? And one guy's like, I want to go with the cute girl. And you're like, I want to go with the cute girl. And then you're fighting over it, and the basic game's like, okay, do you want to just force your way to go with her? Do you want to let the other character go with her? Or some nebulous third choice? And usually these choices will direct how the dialogue plays out, and it will also influence how the women characters feel about you. There's a relationship gauge in the game for the different female characters. And depending on how they like you, that also determines the direction in which the dialogue in the game will kind of progress. So, in addition to that, there's also some other weird type of dialogue selection method called the sequence of soul or something. And what that is like, have you ever seen those Nico Nico videos?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know how all the scripts, the dialogue's just shooting across the screen, going from right to left?
Yeah.
It's like that. It'll be like four or five choices of dialogue that'll just start zipping across the screen, and you have to kind of use the cursor to select the choice you want, which is kind of weird, because what that means is you might be telling yourself, I'm going to hold out for a better choice than what I've seen. But if that better choice doesn't show up, you kind of lost the cool choice, and you're stuck with, oh, I'm just going to go take a piss now or something, which is likely not the optimal decision to make. So, this game, like I mentioned earlier, is not to be taken very seriously at all. There are boob jokes galore. Like I said earlier about following the sex zone talk. This game is riddled with perverse jokes related to the boobage. Flat tits, large tits, and anything in between. And it's weird because while I can laugh at it here and there, they kind of do a lot. Like it hammers down hard to the point where like, I get it. I get it. They like titties. I like them too.
Don't we all?
But yeah, it's like, I have this thing when it comes to games. So, and of course it's not a knock on this game. It's just a general observation, which is if you're in a weird, bizarre sci-fi scenario, like what the fuck's going on? How did I get here? How do I get out? And you're freaking out. Are you really going to become that distracted? Oh, wow, someone has breasts. Not even exposed ones. Just, you've got breasts. I'm like, no, you're not. You're kind of in a spot And I think this is those rare moments where sexual urges get take a backseat to, I need to find safety first, then I'll stare at your boob. Like, but this game just seems to like rail on that. And it's always just hysterical. Like, who are these people? But I digress. The characters themselves have interesting personalities. Because on one hand, it's kind of, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a show. They're one of those TV shows where you kind of don't like the characters, but you like them because you don't. Like Seinfeld. There we go. Let's go with say Seinfeld, okay? Everyone in Seinfeld is an eccentric personality, but they're not genuinely good people in that sense. But you like them because of that dynamic that they have with each other.
Yeah.
This game has that too, because none of these characters are like shining beacons of morality. And yeah, as you play, you're like, well, I still like the main character and I want him to do okay. And I don't want any of these characters to get hurt. I mean, they're fairly innocent enough. You know, I want to see them. I want to see them succeed. I want to see them, you know, work band together to, you know, survive this predicament they face. And quite frankly, I like to see them, you know, interact more with this crazy world they find themselves in. But something that's just something worth mentioning, because a lot of what you're going to be experiencing in this game is less story progression, because it kind of can move at a glacial pace, but a lot of dialogue pertaining to the characters just interacting with each other and just being themselves with each other. So having an enjoyment of the characters is a very important thing for this game.
Yeah.
So, and honestly, it's like I said, I mean, people watch Seinfeld for a very similar reason. I think this game is a similar effect, where the characters aren't like, they're not shining beacons of morality, but due to how they interact with each other, you're interested in seeing how they respond to each other's actions and how they ultimately get out of this predicament together. So I think it works pretty well. So the game, like I said, it's lengthy, but I'm not going to go mincing over the cost, because sales can happen, whatever.
Yeah.
But as a general, just at talking about the game itself, I have enjoyed just playing through it and just seeing things play out as they needed to. I like the idea of, you know, here's a situation, here's some really cool graphics in this game. Because again, I love the colors, I like the art design for the characters, though I don't understand why that one guy has like liver spots on his neck, but whatever. But I actually enjoy playing through the game, and I enjoy seeing it develop and play out. In that regard, the cost could be whatever it is to somebody, but I think the game is an enjoyable ride. It's good bedtime reading, or just, you know, on the John, or just, you know, just lounging around the house, really. And I'm actually starting to get more into this whole visual novel thing. I'm used to playing adventure games, but I'm starting to like more of these visual novels too. And this is a good one for me in that regard, because I'm fond of it.
Nice.
Boobs.
So your overall verdict on Our World Has Ended for $60, what do you say?
I think it is a buy it if you're not in need of story heavy and you're just fine with character interaction. But if you need your story to move at a hasty pace and characters take a back seat, this is a try to deny. But if you don't need that, this is a buy it.
Cool. Sounds
good. You're like,
good.
What? You just, oh, thank you. I thought you were going, but you just ran the whole gamut of review stuff.
Well, you did. I'm getting used to that with you, but it makes sense.
You. Yeah. See, this is all, we got to surf the line here. That's how that goes.
Anyway, the next game that you're here to talk about is called Witch Thief, developed and published by Cardboard Keep. It released April 19th on the Switch for $19.99. In Witch Thief, dodge, duck, and weave through terrifyingly intricate patterns of magical projectiles as you seek the greatest treasure of all, the ancient and powerful grimoire. Purnell, tell us about Witch Thief.
So Witch Thief is a game where you can control one of four characters, two that you start with, two that can be unlocked as you play through the game. Now, this is a 3D bullet hell game. What that means is you're kind of at the, it's hard to say. I guess you're like kind of, it's almost like a behind over the shoulder bit slightly game where you're kind of flying around and enemies pop up when you go through a stage where it's like, okay, go from like room to room. And each time you enter a room, enemies will spawn and they will launch bullets or lasers or some form of projectile. And you have to blast the living daylights out of them in order to survive, kill them, and then move on to the next room until you eventually locate the boss of the stage, defeat that boss, and clear the level. There are five total levels in the game. And throughout each level, you will, aside from killing enemies, you'll also locate a bunch of like just breakable objects. You can use your attack ability to destroy these objects to get either crystals, which will go towards boosting your overall score for the stage, or you'll occasionally stumble across weapon crystals, which will change your weapon type. If you collect more than one of the same weapon type, it will increase in power and ability. Now, unfortunately, one dilemma I found in regards to doing that is, like, if you play a typical shmup, which this game is kind of sort of trying to be, it's just a different style, but it's still kind of a shmup. Usually when you play a shmup, the weapons drops are sort of static. So if you have a system where you can double down and get superpowered guns, you can plot your course to say, okay, get this weapon pick up here, hold off for it, because I know the next one's going to show up further down the line. However, in this game, weapon drops are random. You don't know when or if the weapon type you want will show up. So even though a weapon has three different levels, you might never see the third level. One, because the item just doesn't want to drop. And two, because you're going to die a lot. And when you die in the game, you go down a weapon level, possibly two. I didn't even really truly keep track. I want to say you go down, that's what it is. You lose all your weapon levels, but if your weapon level is over a certain level, you will drop one of the power-ups so you can pick it back up to at least get started on that weapon chain again. So that can be a bit of a noise, like, crap, I finally got to level two. Not anymore, jump. Knock it out. But there is also, thankfully, there's a dodge button in the game where if you press it, you will kind of turn into like an ethereal spirit. And you can move around the screen, and there's a counter at the bottom that tells you how much time you've got left before you run a dodge juice. And then after that happens, it has to kind of charge back up, though it doesn't take too long, and then you can dodge again. There is a magic bomb. Each character has their own unique magic bomb, but there is a magic bomb you can use. You start with three, and sometimes enemies will drop bombs, or you might find a bomb hidden in one of the destructible objects in the game. So, what do I think of this game in general? Now, I've kind of described how it works. I have mixed feelings about it because I enjoy the music. It's very serviceable music, so I didn't need to turn this volume down. But the enemy variety is strangely lacking in the game. Like, there's not a ton of different enemies, but there's also only five stages. So you might not even care, depending on your perception of how you're playing the game. You just go, more things to kill. I don't really care. But if you are the enemy's like a huge amount of enemy variety, you might find that lacking here. In addition to that, for better or worse, this is another depending on the player bid, but stages are long. So you get three lives. Well, depending on the difficulty you pick, because you can choose like chill difficulty and get infinite lives. But I played on normal. You know, normal, you get three lives. You die in one hit. So you get three physical blows before you're out of lives and your game is over. If you die and lose all your lives on the stage, you have to start the entire stage over. Mm-hmm. And if a stage runs for about 30 minutes long, which is fairly different for a shmup, I got to say, if your stage run is taking about 30 minutes, you die at minute 25. Well, guess what? You're doing the entire level again,
which is
kind of annoying. But in addition to that, to make, you know, add insult to injury, when you have to reload the game, loading takes a while. How long does it take? I died, put the game down, scraped the bottom of my dinner bowl, drank the sauce from the bottom of it, moved and put the bowl in the sink, and then sat back down. And that is not an exaggeration. That actually happened today.
Wow.
So that's a pain in the butt. And obviously, loading screens are different things to different people. I'm usually not even one to harp on load times because I understand things need to happen. But that's a lot of time for every failure in a game. This isn't like the boot the game up and that's the one left time it's going to load that long. This is every time you're on a watch. So it's just something that needs to be mentioned and noted. But the last thing that stings for me, because I have to mention it, is I'm a big fan of bullet hell games. I like dodging bullet patterns. I even like that when you fight bosses, if I was interpreting it properly anyway. I think every bullet pattern the enemies use has a different name that they display on the screen, which is kind of cool. Like, it'll be like, you know, like melancholy, I'm making this up by the way, but Melancholy Fury, you know, the ultimate defense, which implies that the bullet pattern is going to be this specific one that involves like bullets swirling out the center coming at you. So you can kind of prep for that.
Yeah.
But for as cool as that is, the unfortunate aspect to this is that the double-edged sword of it being a 3D bullet hell shmup game is that there are some cases where the attacks are not really well prompted or teleprompted, or they'll come from the back in a way that you don't even see it coming. Most particularly with laser beams. I'll fight a boss where sometimes they'll show like crest pop up, which indicates a laser is about to come out. Okay, I'm a grown man. I understand what that means. Dodge the damn line of sight from the crest. Got it. So other times, I'll have fights where the laser just showed up. And I'm like, where'd it come from? Doesn't matter. You're dead, bitch. And it's like, well, gotta take that hit and then just try to survive it through. And a lot of times what that ends up meaning is like, I better spam my bombs. Because I don't want to die here. And I have like one life left. I got three bombs. Milk them. But that I feel as though, I don't know if they can even patch it, because when you think about it, I want to say maybe put like, do a better job of, you know, teleprompting a laser that's about to come out in certain cases where they're currently not. But also, if something's coming from behind you, is there a way to, I don't know, put like a little like a triangle at the bottom of the screen that says, does, there's something coming from this spot behind you. I don't know. But being that it's a bullet hell game, depending on how much stuff is coming from behind you, that can get weird. So I don't even know if that's a fine solution, but it's just something that's worth pointing out, is that it's just, I had a number of moments where that was a pain. At least the normal bullets that came up from behind me, though, I got better as I played, where I was like, okay, understand that you are surrounded. Don't focus straight ahead solely. Try to spin and check your six. And yeah, I guess that is it. Check your six. I'm a fighter pilot.
Proud of you. Check,
thank you. Took me all 2 minutes. Yeah, but I had to figure out how to check my six and then go back and check my nine and then my 12 just to have my surroundings in mind at all times. But even once you get better at that, it doesn't really alleviate the whole blind laser bit. So that can be a bit of an annoyance. And there are two modes in the game. One is a story mode and one is a dungeon mode. But though it kind of fooled me when I booted the game up originally, story dungeon mode isn't really exploring dungeons and finding potential pickups as you're blowing monsters away. It's just what I would consider like an endless mode. You would just go from room to room of a dungeon, killing the enemies, and then at the end of that line of rooms is a boss, similar to how story mode would do it. The boss, I believe, is randomized. And then when you beat that boss, they'll calculate your score, and you'll move on to a second set of rooms. And if you beat that, the game will total up the score from your previous room plus your new set of rooms and give you an accumulated score, meaning that depending on how long you survive for, you'll just get that many more points, and it's going for a high score, essentially.
Interesting.
Yeah, it definitely, honestly, if you end up finding yourself enjoying the game, there's nothing wrong with having that option available to just kind of mull through and just see how long you can last out.
True.
But it's like, there's definitely some elements there that definitely need to be addressed before you make that decision on if it's for you or not.
Yeah. But, well, as it stands for $20, what do you say?
I would say it is not a deny. It is more of a try, because I did find fun in it. It wasn't a game that I just kind of found myself gagging over or anything like that. I just had some gripes about it that didn't put it in the buy it camp, as mentioned throughout the review. So if you feel as though those gripes are things that you could either see through or like see yourself being able to just tolerate, then that's not a problem. Or quite frankly, if you're just interested in seeing how a 3D shmup would play, a bullet hell shmup would play out, this is your chance. So, but just know that those are going to be issues you'll be dealing with as you give this game a try.
Yeah. Well, overall, it still sounds good.
Yeah. It's still, honestly, like I said, get past those things. It's not a bad game at all.
Awesome. Sounds good. Last game that you're here to talk about is called Venture Kid, developed by Snikabo, published by FDG Entertainment, released May 2nd on the Switch for $10 even. The evil Dr. Teklov is about to build a secret weapon disguised in his huge space fortress. Time is running out, but our hero Andy stepped up to defeat him and fight his way through Teklov's minions. Join Andy and prepare yourself for a dangerous journey that demands great skill and determination. Will you succeed? Pernell, did you succeed?
Well, I play Mega Man games, so of course I did. this game is totally basically, I like Mega Man. I want to make a game that's not Mega Man, but is Mega Man. In a nutshell, And that is not a bad take at all, because this game is fantastic. I love it. It doesn't hurt that the OST is composed by Norn Red, who has a penchant for suckering me into buying games that I otherwise would not play, such as Cartoon Network Matchland for the cell phone networks. Damn game. Really? Anyway, the point is, on Rhythm and Pixels, a listener suggested that game to me. Or correction, he suggested his track from that game and said, hey, Parnell, you should play this on the show. And I was like, well, I don't want to play a track from a game I've never played, so I'll just try it out and see. And if it just, I can get a feel for how the music sounds in the game. And then I've been playing it for 2 years.
Nice.
It is a bad habit, but
what game is it again?
Cartoon Network Matchland. It's just a generic match 3 game for cell phones.
I'm going to look this up.
But it's
up
like
now.
Cartoon Network characters. It's a rough time. I guess I've been playing it for 2 years. It's addiction. It's an addiction. Beginning of 2018, but I'm almost positive it's been 2 years. But as far as this game goes, the same composer worked on both games, and the music is really, really good. I like it on every stage. It's a gem. But the gameplay itself, what is it? Well, the main character goes between, is like a bunch of theme stages. I want to say 8 or 9 of them total. The main character explores each level, going from left to right. Sometimes from right to left.
What?
Amazing, right? As he goes from across the levels, he blasts enemies with his arm cannon. I'm sorry, pea pistol, arm, whatever they call it, and basically just goes through the levels, gets to the end, fights the boss, and then concludes the stage. At the end of every level, his professor friend shows up and gives him a new piece of equipment that he can utilize. Now, whereas in Mega Man, every weapon is typically an attack weapon, and all the utilities are like things that Rush does. In this game, some of the things the professor gives you will be weapons, and in other cases, they'll be utilities like a double jump or the ability to walk across spikes, which is actually really handy to have around. Handy Andy. It's honestly a lot of fun to play. It's simple, yet it can be tough if you put it on hard mode, because the bosses become bullet sponges, and if they have a pattern that sucks for you to deal with, you'll be trying to survive for a long time. But that's
my least favorite way to make games harder, is to just make enemies bullet sponges.
Yeah, I can agree with you there, but when you really lay it out, with a game's like this, that's almost all they ever tend to do. Like, true. I think Mega Man... Because like Mega Man 10, I think, was the first one where they gave us a look behind the veil, so to speak, because people complained so much about Mega Man 9 being difficult that they put an easy mode in Mega Man 10, which was their way of lessening the difficulty from the norm. And the way they lessened the difficulty was enemies took more damage per shot, and they added little platforms to make it easier to make jumps. And I don't know if this game has added platforms or not, but it definitely... will change the damage output and basically damage output for both enemies and allies alike. But overall, though, the game itself is still a joy to play. I enjoyed playing every level in the game, and there's also little like hidden trinkets on each stage that you can find in like weird out of the way places. Like each stage has one hidden trinket, so you can kind of take the time to go and look for those if you can. And from what I could tell, with the exception of possibly the double jump. Actually, not even with the double jump, I believe you can get every hidden item without the bonus item. So as long as you just have a keen eye and know what you're doing, you can probably find them all. But it's just a fun little simple game. But it's weird because we got Mega Man 11, which Capcom put out last year, which is a great game. I'm not even knocking it. I think it's a fantastic game. But it's playing games like Venture Kid in that Metagal game from a couple weeks ago that just show you that the Mega Man basic formula, like the graphic style and everything, is so damn solid. Like, they stumbled on gold with that. Like, you almost can't do it wrong.
Yeah.
And it'll live forever.
Mighty Number 9. But
that's the thing, though. People even say that. I think Mighty Number 9's only fault is that it was hampering too much on trying to be Mega Man, because Inafune himself was trying to sell it as another Mega Man. If he was just like, here's this cool game and it involves a guy who assimilates robots or whatever, I think it'd have been fine. It's an average game. But the hype train and people putting $300 down on his Kickstarter and crap and over, he's basically shooting his load before it was done. Hey, I got a Mighty Number 9 cartoon series and a comic book line and Tory Lanez. Well, yeah, when's the game coming out? We haven't gotten to that yet, but the cartoon is going to be great. Like, that's where he went wrong there. But the game is in and of itself, which I ended up playing after all the hate died down. I actually left my copy on the shelf intentionally. I was like, I'm going to wait till this cools off. Then I'm going to try it out. Like, this game's okay. It's just, you should have just like, here's this cool game I want to do, and not try to ride his old coattails to try to make a buck or whatever, because it backfired on him. But at least on the positive, I don't think Iga's going to have that issue with Bloodstained, but I was definitely worried that he would, because he kind of did something similar. Like, hey, you like Castlevania? Well, here's not Castlevania, but you're going to like it. Now, here's my Kickstarter tears. Like, come on, man. Mm-hmm. But that game, at least, is going to be okay, so I'm not sweating. But side tangent averted. This game is okay. I honestly enjoy this game. It's a lot of fun. The formula still holds firm. And the only downside, though, this is cosmetic at best, so don't even take it hard, but there's no... Normally, Mega Man games have, like, themed bosses. Like, this level is Fireman, and this level is Waterman. There's no water. There should have been. But in this game, you go to locations, and the bosses are just bosses. Like, you get to the end, there's a guy, you gotta kill him. There's no, like, sense of attachment of the boss to the stage like Mega Man had, but... it's not a big deal. It's just a minor Pernell gripe.
Yeah, minor gripe aside, $10 on Venture Kid. What do you say?
Oh, it's a solid buy. Fantastic game, and I think it's worth $10 easily.
Sounds good. Hopefully this one shows up on some other platforms. I know it's only on the Switch right now, and I believe on PC, but hopefully it comes to Xbox and PlayStation in the future as well.
That would be nice, though. I have been hearing, I mean, I can understand why it hit the Switch, though. This might be a question if any developer is listening. Hell, if the Venture Kid developer is listening and they want to answer this question, I'd appreciate it, because I was having this chat with somebody the other day while we were talking about, I was talking to my friend about Bugs Must Die, you know, the game I reviewed a few weeks ago. Loved the game. And I was telling him how much I liked it and how, like, I wish more people had access to play it and that more people would buy it, because it wasn't selling too hot back in the day. And back early on. And he goes, they should have just put it on the Switch. I would have bought it on the Switch. And I said, they actually had a pop-up message in the game that said they sold like 50,000 copies, some crazy number. They released it on the Switch. And it had me thinking, why not just put it on the Switch? Like, is there some kind of added cost that comes for, I mean, I guess you got to pay like Nintendo a cut for licensing on a console, or the PlayStation or Sony or Microsoft. But for the most part, is there really an added cost to just jumping Steam and going to consoles as well, as opposed to just waiting to get money from Steam and then porting it?
I don't know.
Because at least with from the numbers I've been hearing, at least with the Switch, it's almost like a no-brainer to port it there these days. Like, True. Their eShop is atrocious. I'm not going to deny that. But that initial hit on the store is good money.
Yeah, so I'm just glad that you're able to sort your library alphabetically now instead of just a line of in order that you played.
I agree wholeheartedly. Like, I usually just ignore the updates where I was like, whatever, anti-piracy measures. But with that, I was like, about damn time. Why did it take so long just to sort my library?
Yeah, for real.
Like, simple stuff that should have been on launch. Like, I'm not going to knock it. I'm glad I got it. But it took a while for that to happen.
It did.
Weird stuff, man. But I mean, they also need to get better. They need to do a sorting thing for the store itself too, though. But that aside, the initial hit on that store is good money for developers. So it's like, it makes me wonder what added cost truly going to having a lot of developers wait and make money on Steam before going to consoles. I'm genuinely curious. Might even just be like infrastructure related, but is it really? I don't know. I'd be curious to hear like an actual like developer's answer to that.
Well, maybe someone will listen and write into us. Feel free. Anyone can write into us, the smlpodcast@gmail.com. We always love getting emails. So if you're listening, drop us a line. Say hi.
And Robbie, if you're listening, we want to see that triple indie hop flip trick tech style spin doozy.
We want to see the clean kick flip 50-50 kiss rail and land it.
Better believe it.
That's what we want to see, Robbie.
That's right. Do it for Tech Deck. Do it for Galoob, which I don't think actually developed those at all. But still, Galoob is a great
Galoob.
Company. They were a great company.
Oh, shit. Pernell, it is always good having you on the show. Do you have any final words before we move on to Chris?
scroll back and repeat Robbie's thing. Get on it, Robbie. Want the tech deck? I'm still loving. Also, Pogs. Show us your best Pog moves.
All right, moving on. We got Chris Taylor joining us. Chris, how's it going?
Hey, going just fine.
How was your weekend?
It was good. Okay,
I heard a kitty.
I know. In, we were just talking before you hit record about how your cat has been bothering you, that is to say, meowing loudly. And I was like, my cat's out of the room right now, so he'll be fine, except he might scratch at the door and meow later. And then just as soon as we start talking,
meow,
he meows at the door.
Love it.
Cats have strategy, I'm telling you.
They do.
Cattergy. Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Cattergy? I don't know. No, it was a good weekend. I saw the end game. I'm actually current on a major thing in pop culture, which is very unusual.
I'm
yeah,
proud
my
of
cats
you.
Come. My cats come straight over to me to start meowing.
Nice.
And past that, I beat Fairy Fencer F Advent Dark Force.
Nice.
Except that, so my friend started the game because she saw how ridiculous the dialogue and voice acting was, and that's exactly her cup of tea. So she started a game shortly after I did, except she bought the PS4 version, and she went on a completely different storyline path, and she's describing all this ridiculous stuff to me, and I'm like, that didn't happen in my game at all. So I'm actually new game plussing my way through the other storylines right now, because apparently this game is ridiculous on like three different levels.
I love when games do that. Like when you can play a game and your friend plays a game and you have completely different experiences.
Exactly. Yeah. Cause I always do like what the game tells me to at first, and she does the exact opposite.
Nice.
So, and the game completely changes based on those decisions. So it's pretty cool. It's a little bit of a late further endorsement of that game from me.
Yeah. But, I know you liked that one when you covered it.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's still good. It's even better now, actually. So I'm still enjoying the heck out of it. And might need to pick up that Moero Chronicles.
We just called it Mo covered. Chronicles. We just Mo called it Mo.
Well, it's supposed to be Moe.
And then the R-O on there, so whatever.
Yeah, I get it. But that's from the same, you know, it's from Idea Factory, so I might pick that up while it's still on sale.
Yeah, Purnell enjoyed that one.
Yeah. Anyway, though, I guess I have other games I need to talk about, though.
Yeah, you do. You got four of them to talk about tonight. You ready to dive into these?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, first game that you're here to talk about is called Deponia, developed and published by Daedalic Entertainment, released April 24th on the Switch for $39.99, Xbox One and PS4 for $19.99. Help Rufus, the poor boy from the junkyard, to win over the girl from heaven. Only with this rich girl from his dreams, he might be able to escape Deponia and unexpectedly to save the planet. Chris, tell us about Deponia.
All right, Deponia. Well, this is a... Actually, funny enough, I covered another game from this exact developer before, and it was Silence. And this is another game that they have come out with. This one, apparently, like, I looked it up because the storyline looked like it was a continuation of a story, so I thought maybe it was like Silence and that it was a sequel that they just, you know, re-released recently. But it turns out this is still the first game, but it's a series of four games that are currently out on, I think, PCs or Androids or stuff I don't play.
I think they're on everything right now, and funny enough, they released kind of in reverse order. So finally, at last, getting the first game in the series.
That's amazing. That's a little bit like Phantasy Star. But, kind of, I guess. Maybe not. But anyways, so, Deponia is a point-and-click adventure, which, you know, is rife on the Switch. That's a great hub for that particular kind of game. And it's a kind of game that I like, so I appreciate getting so many of them on the Switch, especially through the podcast. This one, yeah, exactly. Thank you. This one is similar to Silence in that it is very high quality as far as the production goes. So the the animation of it is a high def 2D, but you know, it's hand drawn animation, so it doesn't like it doesn't move like super fluidly like a 3D game. It's like, you know, each frame is a drawing, so you know, it actually reminded me a lot of Discworld on the PlayStation and I guess the PC from back in the day, which is high praise because that's actually my favorite of the point and clicks, despite it being stupidly hard. But this is 20 years later, so there's a lot more quality of life in Deponia. So instead of moving a cursor around, you actually, a lot like Bertram Fiddle, which is actually my current reigning favorite on the Switch, you actually find like hotspots that are highlighted as you move your character around. So you actually move your character around freely, and anytime you're near something that you can interact with, the spot highlights, and you can, choose with the face buttons, like how you want to interact with the thing. You don't have to go to a menu or anything. In fact, you don't even have to directly access your inventory. You can, actually scroll through items quickly with the directional pad, which is huge for me because when you play a point and click, of any sort of worth, you're going to be basically using every item that you have on everything that you can interact with.
Yeah.
Especially towards the end when you're just like, I have no idea what to do. I'm just going to try whatever and see if it works. And this game seems to be no different. It's not super hard, but it does actually present a pretty good challenge in terms of like, well, I better try everything or, going to be stuck in this room for hours. So, the actual plot of it is that you play a poor kid called Rufus who lives on a planet called Deponia. And, this place is basically, made of trash, because it's sort of like the film Elysium. There actually is a place called Elysium in this game where it's like, in outer space and it's a heaven beyond the clouds. And they just dump their trash on Earth where apparently they've assumed that the planet is currently uninhabited. So it's a little bit of a dystopian future sort of thing. And you play a guy who really wants to escape this planet, and so he cooks up, scheme after scheme, and you kind of have to help him along, building his inventions, and his invention, singular, at the beginning of this game, and then it takes you on this adventure where you actually do get to, go to the place and befriend and fall in love with this lady who you're trying to scam in order to, Yeah, the classic love story.
Oh, yeah.
And basically every room is something with, some goal that's stated, and you're just kind of left to your own devices as to how to get to that goal. But fortunately, there's lots and lots of dialogue and analysis from your main character, who is best described, I think, as a smart aleck, which, of course, I always appreciate in a character. Actually really quite like the voice acting in this one. It's done really well. And you walk around and look at stuff and he'll make a comment on it and then maybe you can figure out how to combine that with something else. And like I said, it's a point and click, so you're just basically going to be doing hearing a lot of the same lines of failure essentially, but that's pretty cool. But yeah, what I really like about this one, like I said, the aesthetics are great. It's not as artsy and definitely not as emotional as Silence. This is a comedy game, but it's not as silly and over the top as Bertram Fiddle. It's just kind of like, as I said before, it's very close to Discworld, probably the closest I've seen on the Switch, in that it is humorous and it is funny. But it's also like, it's actually telling a story and, it's really pretty intriguing. Like everything that happens and, you kind of want to see, whether you actually meet your goal. But, as it is a point and click, it's one of those things where, don't expect to breeze through this thing. You're going to be spending, maybe up to an hour every room trying to figure out, what's going on. But I will say, for at least the first while in the game, like, pretty much every room can be solved just by process of elimination. So I didn't have any real trouble, like, progressing in the game like I have in point and clicks of yore, you know, of the olden days.
Yeah.
And this is thankfully also not one of those kind of point and clicks, I think, where it will actually, you can screw yourself out of, you know, winning the game by missing some item or some such.
Yeah, I would hope that we're past that point with point and click adventures these days, where the old days, if you missed one random item at the beginning of the game, you could never beat it, and you didn't know until the end of the game.
Exactly. Damn you, King's Quest!
Yeah, pretty much.
I actually 100%ed King's Quest 2 back in the early 90s.
Oh, look at you.
That was the one that was made of Legos, where you had to type, like, your message, and if you typed the wrong thing, it just wouldn't know what to do. So we've come a long way. Ah, sorry, hang on a second. I just unplugged my headphone by accident.
Proud of you.
Okay, I'm here.
Yay.
Like I said, we've come hold for edit.
Oh no, I'm not editing shit. Fuck that.
But yeah, we've come a long way since the King's Quest, and Deponia definitely shows that, and I really think it's some good quality.
Cool. So $40 on the Switch, $20 on Xbox and PlayStation. What do you think of this game?
Well, I don't know anything besides touch controls that, you know, and portability that recommends it on the Switch above the other things. It might just be Nintendo tax, or this is a game that might have a physical release.
From what I saw, it doesn't have a physical release. I think it's just a Nintendo tax.
Man, there's like five different companies that do limited prints of these things, though, so I'm not going to say never.
True.
I don't know what doubles the price of it on Switch above everything else, especially since the Switch already has so many point-and-click adventures. But if this is the genre that you enjoy the most, which is actually like my friend that plays Fairy Fencer Advent Dark Force, she loves point and clicks, and so, you know, this is definitely something that would be worth that price for the fact that it seems to be a really meaty game. Like, I was reading through the plot, and yeah, it seems like it has a lot of rooms, so at least it'll keep you going for a long time. But you know, it's up to you whether a $40 digital only game is, you know, really worth the thing. But as far as point and clicks go, I mean, it's up there with Silence. It's just a little bit of a different flavor. It's, you know, funnier and a little sort of crisper and cleaner, and, you know, it doesn't seem to have any, like, death consequences if you don't solve the puzzle, which, you know, Silence has. It's definitely, this is the kind of point and click that's for sure my favorite kind. That is to say, it has hot zones, it has, you know, so you don't have to pixel hunt, it has great dialogue, and, you know, it actually tells a really cool story. So for that reason, I do recommend it. But, you know, if you play it on Xbox or PlayStation and you want to save $20, then, you know, go there and purchase it.
Or if you are interested in playing it on Xbox or PlayStation, I would assume PlayStation has the same thing, but Xbox has the Deponia collection of all four games for $40. So it might be worth looking into that.
Yeah, Xbox owners, there you go right there. That's the whole set.
Yeah, I would assume that they have the same collection on PlayStation, but I don't know. Obviously, this is the only Deponia game on the Switch so far, so yeah. Maybe after the rest of the game's release, we'll see some kind of collection as well. But
yeah, I'm personally hoping for a physical card. I do enjoy the physical cards, and especially since I've long since filled up my 200 gigabyte memory card. Until I get that 400 gigabyte memory card, I'm going to need to get, you know, I'm going to need all the physical releases I can get. So. True.
Oh no, you'll have to delete things.
I already have. There's some games up in the clouds right now. I'm sad to say.
Wow.
Yeah. But oh well.
Oh well. Next game to talk about is called Golf Peaks, developed by Afterburn, published by 7Levels, released March 14th on the Switch for $4.99. Ditch your hiking gear, don your golfing cap, and climb mountain peaks just by playing golf. Solve over 100 enjoyable yet challenging puzzles accompanied by relaxing music and minimalist eye-pleasing graphics, and conquer the summits. Chris, tell us about Golf Peaks.
I love that they say over 100. Like, they can't type 108. That's the answer. I think it's 108, if I remember correctly. Yeah, Golf Peaks. So this is a much simpler review. That is to say, this is a quote unquote golf game. Heavy finger quotes. Yes. It's actually a card based puzzle game, and you know, level based. So basically, as you play this game, you have an isometric grid. Think like Kirby's Dream Course or something like that.
That was a good game.
It is so good. I'm glad that it's on the SNES Mini. But anywho's, so think about that. It's, you know, got the isometric plane, sometimes with slopes, sometimes with, you know, flat across type, even planes. And you've got your ball and you got your hole. The ball is within putting distance of the hole, usually. And then on the bottom of the screen, you have two, you know, you have any number of cards. The cards will have a number and maybe some other symbols as well. But the number indicates how many squares that card will move the ball towards the hole. In whatever, well, it'll move it in any of the four directions that you aim the... aim the thing. So, you know, you aim towards the hole and pick a one card. And if the ball is one square away from the hole, then that will knock the ball into the hole and then next level. So the way they complicate this is that, you know, of course, the levels get more complicated. And also you get an array of cards and you kind of have to choose the order and direction in which you use them. So you'll end up with like, you know, a kind of 16 by 16 square, and you'll have like, you know, three cards that will do three, you know, squares, and you'll have one that does one square. And then there's some like, in order to go up a level, there will be a little jump indicator on the card. And so it'll tell you this one will jump and go two spaces, and then maybe even move a further space. It'll be like, you know, two jump symbol and then one. And yeah. So it's all about finding the correct order of cards to use and using them in the correct direction. And, you know, just trying to pass through all the levels. And, you know, it's basically as simple as that. You know, they get into things like sand traps, which no matter what kind of card you use, if you hit a sand trap, then you will only go as far as that sand trap unless you jump over it. So that's an interesting thing, too, because that that kind of makes you re-strategize and kind of, you know, conserve your cards that have the exact number of moves that you'll need once you're past the sand traps and things like that. It ended up being actually really cool and like kind of complex, but I mean the core game stays exactly the same all throughout. And yeah, it does have eye pleasing minimalist graphics.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not gonna argue. It looks like golf on an isometric plane, and there's
it's a
cards.
Cute looking game. I dug it.
Yeah.
I picked it up earlier today and put like a good hour and a half into it. I kept wanting to go one more puzzle.
Yeah, that's exactly the kind of game this is. And I definitely like cleared like 20 levels on my first time sitting down to it. And I really, really enjoy the soundtrack. It's actually really relaxing. And, you know, not often. Well, no, it is often actually that these puzzle games have great soundtracks, but this one is no exception.
Cool. So overall, $5 on Golf Peaks. What do you say?
Yeah, $5. This is a great casual game. It's a great little brain teaser. I definitely recommend it. I think that it's a really good game for that price.
I agree. I dropped the $5 on it and I'm very happy with it.
Yeah, I'm going to definitely be trying to get through all the way through this one.
If you can, because they get tough later on.
Yeah, I'll probably give up at some point, but I'm going to try.
Oh, man. All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Crash Bots, developed by Neon Chimp Games, published by Sometimes You, released May 1st on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $9.99. Take control of the latest line of robots and test their fighting capabilities, agility, and endurance in various arenas filled with dangerous obstacles, booby traps, and enemies. Chris, tell us about Crash Bots.
Okay, Crash Bots. Well, actually, speaking of isometric, this is an isometric action game. Technically, I suppose you could call it an auto runner. It's also kind of a puzzle game. So the way CrashBots plays out is that you select your robot, but you know you only start with one robot for a rather long time, like because you have to find the pieces of the other robots within the level, and then actually you know complete the level in order to build other robots. But you know, fortunately, this game comes with a very hefty tutorial, so you're able to like learn all the moves and stuff. But essentially, you've got a robot who is going to auto run in your isometric plane, going towards the goal. So you move the robot from left to right in order to dodge obstacles. You can also push the A button to use your jetpack, which allows you to float for, you know, a time that is determined by your energy level. You can also slide underneath some objects such as like laser beams and things like that. Again, using your energy level. And you can also fire your lasers at things like crates and enemies and targets that get in your way. There's certain like certain blocks that if you run over them, then it will get rid of an obstacle for you. Some will actually trigger an obstacle. And like I said, the whole goal is to collect coins and also stars that are, you know, scattered throughout the level, sometimes hidden in crates, and then get to the goal. And then the goal is basically, you know, once you get there, then you get points based on your speed, how much energy you have left, whether you got hit, you know, and you know, basically, it rates you if you hit certain criteria. Like, some stages will force you to, or not force you, but, you know, they require you to do a flawless run in order to get that last star or something like that. And you do need a certain amount of stars to get to the next tier of levels. There's a huge amount of levels in this game. I don't know the exact number. I think it's like 180, maybe. I feel like I saw that number in there somewhere. But it's like, you know, the first wave of stages is 26 stages, and there's like six waves, or six, I guess, worlds or something like that. So, you know, that's that actually does sound pretty close to 180. So there's lots here. And yeah, even from the get-go, even in the tutorial stages, this game gets pretty hard. You definitely have to watch out for your energy levels. If you use too many of them and then get hit like once, then you could explode. Sometimes you could do really well with them, but then you'll get distracted and run into like a spinning buzzsaw or something like that, and then, you know, get hit enough times to get killed. This game really does seem to be all about sort of memorizing these extremely short levels and then, you know, sort of blazing the most efficient path through them. And, you know, like I said, they can all be played again. And the cool thing about it, though, is that you can upgrade your robots between stages. And even if you don't make it through the end of a stage, or, you know, if you replay levels over and over again, you can always collect more coins. And with the coins, you can actually improve your robots. So it's one of those that you could, you know, theoretically, you could actually play this game and get through it purely based on attrition. But there's a lot of skill involved in this thing. And yeah, like the graphics are nice. They're you know, they're pretty small because the whole thing takes place on, you know, the screen and in an isometric view. So, you know, it's not like a big and loud game as far as the look goes. And the sound is pretty cool. It's you know, the music's very, I'm gonna say like a kind of Eurobeat, like something that you would hear in a European developed game. A little bit, yeah, a little bit, nice. A little bit boots and pants in this game.
Boots and pants and boots and pants.
But yeah, this is definitely this game has a lot of meat on it, especially for $10. But like I said, a lot of it's pretty hard to get to because you know you gotta do what you can to get to that goal.
Yeah. Difficulty aside, any other negatives with the game?
Nothing really that I noticed. The only thing is, of course, since it's an isometric plane type of video game, and you don't like, it doesn't toggle between different left and right planes, right? You actually have free movement between, you know, three obvious, you know, tiers. Well, usually three. I mean, sometimes it's more, but it's just like, so sometimes you'll do something like run over to the right and, you know, use your jetpack to try and collect these coins and this star and get over this laser grid. But, oh, you actually were slightly too far to the left and now you didn't get any of that stuff. And then, like, you try to correct yourself and you run into the lasers. And, like, you know, there's certain things where, like, stuff gets in your way. But that's just, that's stuff that can get overcome by just playing the game more and just sort of getting used to the view. You know, that's, isometric games all have that problem. So that's nothing unique to CrashBots.
Yeah. But overall, $10 on CrashBots. What do you think?
I think this is worth it for your action puzzle crowd, for folks who like to get themselves into a nice, good challenge. For the casual, you might end up getting stuck on, like, the first few levels, but certainly a worthy challenge. And I think the quality is there. So, I mean, $10 is not exactly a prohibitive price point. So I'm going to go ahead and say it is a you know, buy it.
But casuals need not apply.
Casuals need to just take a second look. Maybe watch a gameplay video or something, watch somebody rocking those levels and see what you think.
All right, sounds good. Final game to talk about tonight is called Tabletop Racing World Tour Nitro Edition, developed by Playrise Digital, published by Greenlight Games, released May 1st on the Switch for $29.99. Get behind the wheel of 16 ultra-cool miniaturized racing cars and engage in combat racing like no other. Master over 30 tabletop racetracks in a bid for glory, then take the battle online and compete with the best in the world. Chris, tell us about Tabletop Racing.
All right, Tabletop Racing. This one, actually, speaking of what we were just talking about, that is to say, between-level stuff. So this game is a racing game that actually has what I always look for in a racing game and never seem to find, and that is to say accessibility, because racing games tend to be very inaccessible. You kind of have to know how to, like, do, like, complicated drifts and, like, you know, how to, like, apply brakes perfectly and memorize levels and stuff like that, even to get out of the gate with some of these things. I've always praised Excite Truck as my favorite racing game because you don't even have to win in order to get enough points to, like, move on. So, you know, it's not just a race for first place. It's a who can get the most points kind of thing. And this game actually almost got there with that for me, because it is it's a racing game, but it also has a combat element to it in most stages. That is to say, you can pick up question blocks like Mario Kart style, which might have a rocket or a bomb or, you know, an ice ray, something like that. And you can get points by, like, actually hitting other cars. You can get points by collecting coins in the stages, and of course you collect points by winning the races, and all those points go towards unlocking more stuff and upgrading your vehicle. So this is the kind of game where you can just keep losing, and, like, it's, you know, like in the previous game, you can eventually just purchase yourself, like, a really awesome car, and then it makes winning a lot easier.
Yay!
Yay! I always love when racing games do that. And in fact, you know, this game actually, I think in the first hour, I already had a really nice car unlocked, and I had it, like, customized almost all the way. It was, like, winning races left and right, and that was just, you know, within the first hour is usually when I, like, am just able to purchase one upgrade in a, yeah, you know, in a similar racing game. So that's a high mark right out of the gate. So this game is it seems like a fairly standard racing game, but actually every, you know, it's done in that style, like Micro Machines or like something else. I think I played Super Toy Car Racing or something like that last year.
Yeah, Super Toy Cars.
Yeah, Super Toy Cars, where they're actually really tiny cars, and thus you're racing on things like tabletops and, you know, like workbenches or work tables. There's even a restaurant table where there's just a bunch of bread and, like, fruit around that you're racing around. So it's kind of got that that fantastical element to it. All of the cars that you are racing in this game are basically parodies of well-known vehicles. So you've got the faux Rari. And my personal favorite, you get an RV van called Breaking Bad. Which, oh, God. Breaking, like, car breaking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it even has the little, you know, has little squares, you know, the table of element squared things around. It's very, very clear what they're going
for. That's fantastic.
There. Yeah, and I think their first card that you get is a bug, but I don't remember what the pun to it was. But I ended up getting one of the little British cars that, you know, is like the best of the worst set. So there's like four different tiers of quality in terms of like the cars, and they get really, really expensive when you go up a tier, which I guess means that the rewards are much better when you are racing in that tier. But conceivably, you could get the best car in the game right off the bat if you just race several hundred times. And in, you know, level one or whatever.
That works.
Which, again, I like that that's available. That's kind of a sequence break, you know? But, so yeah, like I said, the racing, like the cars all act much differently, which is kind of cool. So it definitely means that you can find your favorite. You can also change the wheels in order to have a vehicle that drifts. And the game even tells you, it's like, well, drifting isn't necessary, but you can do it if you want. So, again, I really enjoy that because I don't like it when games force you to do like weird stuff like that.
No, I know. In Forza games, they have drift events, and I'm fucking terrible at drifting.
Exactly. It's because it's a weird mechanic that doesn't translate well to video games.
Like, the only game I could drift well in is Mario Kart, because it's just hold the button and move left and right, and that's
Yeah, for sure. Like, those slide, those power slides, like in Mario Kart DS.
Yeah.
Snaking is what they called it.
Fucking
snaking.
You just
go left to right and keep boosting yourself. Yeah, I definitely did that. I was nasty on Mario Kart DS. Anyways, so this game doesn't have that, or rather it has it as an option, or, you know, like I said, you can just go through and, like, try and shoot everybody, which is great, too. So there's different kinds of races in this game, and that actually, I thought that was pretty cool. So you've got your standard race, which is just, you know, you, five other cars, and, you know, you pick up the Mario Kart-style balloons and, you know, shoot missiles or bombs or whatever, try to get first place or whatever. And like I said, third place will get you to the next thing at least. So you don't actually have to do first place. It just gives you more money. And then there's stuff like where you have to basically race for a certain amount of time and just try and complete, basically give it your best lap. So whatever your best lap is, they rate that against what the goal is and then award you accordingly. And then there's one where you actually have to do a time trial and get the best time. Again, if you hit a goal time, then you get, you know, to move on from that. And then, like I said, eventually, after doing, you know, a couple of rounds of this, you get to the actual competition, which allows you to move on past that tier. And the competition is actually several races in a row. And you have to, like I said, Mario Kart style, your combined points between all the rounds is what gets you to the next level. So you're basically playing three or four different types of racing games in order to get through each part of the game. And there's actually several parts to the game, which is kind of cool. So
yeah,
there's
something like 180 different race events that you can do in the game.
Yes, that must be ridiculous. That must be where I got the number 180.
Maybe.
But yeah, so there's like a lot to do in this game. And again, what I love about it is that the rewards actually come at you pretty quick, like right out of the gate. So you don't have to be stuck with the default car for like several hours or, you know, days and nights and, you know, just trying to win one race so I can maybe buy a better like handling system.
Maybe.
It's like I said, 1 hour and I was already in the car that I wanted and, you know, it was improving it to like almost the top degree, and like I said, it was winning races left and right. So like I said, and then getting into the aesthetics of the game, of course, the graphics actually look really good. I did complain, I think, before about one of the other racing games as far as like it being sluggish. This game actually moves smooth, and I really appreciate that in a racing game, of course. It runs smooth, it looks good. The graphics definitely look good. The stages are, like I said, really interesting because it's small scale stuff, but blown up to be, you know, car sized. And the music is the music's interesting because it's like it's all remixes of songs that I don't think exist. So it'll be like this song remix featuring this person and this person. And, you know, it'll say the actual name of the song before every stage. And I was like, I don't recognize a single one of these things. I don't think it's licensed music. I think somebody just wrote these tunes and was like, this is a remix of something else I wrote.
And well, it says it is a funky, exclusive breakbeat soundtrack by producer Wes Smith of Juice Recordings.
Okay, so it's actually licensed music from a genre I have zero knowledge of.
Probably.
But the truth
is it good?
It is. It's good. And it is funky. It's got them horn blats. It's got them bass lines. Nice. It's actually a very enjoyable soundtrack. So, yep.
Good stuff. So, $30 on Tabletop Racing World Tour Nitro Edition. What do you think?
$30. I think this is worthwhile. You know, it's not trying to be like a, you know, Gear Club Unlimited. It's not trying to be a Mario Kart. It's somewhere in there. But it also is not cheap. That is to say, the production values of this game do not seem to be cheap. So I think $30 is actually a pretty fair price on this one. Seems really fun. I like the online aspect of it. It seems like you can do multiplayer on the couch too. Which
yeah, they have split screen offline and on. So you can do two-player online together, which is awesome. I love when games have that.
This is the kind of racing game I would definitely suggest if I had friends over. and I own Mario Kart, so that's saying a lot. You know, Mario Kart's usually the one that ends up winning, but I might be like, hey, let's try this one out. Well, you know, especially once I unlock everything. So, yeah.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yep.
Well, that is it for this episode. It has been another successful episode of reviews and talking and all that fun stuff.
Yes, fun stuff.
Yeah, I don't know how to end my shows anymore. I do so many of them that I don't know, I'll fall back on the crutch I usually do. Chris, do you have any final words to end the show?
You know, I never think about them. I wish that my cat was still awake now so I could just have him give the final words.
Meow.
Meow. I'm drinking an orange vanilla Coke, and they're delicious. If y'all haven't tried those yet, you need to get on that.
We've talked about them on the show a number of times. I'm glad that you enjoy them, too.
I do. They're so good. It's like a Coke and a Popsicle.
They are. They're so delicious.
Indeed.
I'm going to have one now.
Yeah, and we're not getting any money from Coke, but if they want to give us money, definitely try a new Coca-Cola orange vanilla today.